Canto 5, Chapter 18, Text 11. Yasangalabdham nijaviya vaibhavam Tirtham ahusam sprishatam himanasam Haratyajanta shrutibhirgatam gajam Ratyajanta shuti bhirgaton gajam Ko vaina sevite mukunda vikramam. Sangalam tham nijavirvai bhavam. Mother, would you like Yet, of whom the devotees, Sangalabdham, achieved by the association, Nijavirya Vaibhavam, whose influence is uncommon, Tirtham, holy places like the Ganges, Muhu, repeatedly, Samspadishyatam, of those touching, he certainly, Manasam, the dirty things in the mind, Hariti, vanquishes, Aja, the supreme unborn, Give me a second, nice way. Anta, in the core of the heart, Shrutibi, by the ears, Gata, entered, Angajam, dirty things or infections of the body, Ka, who, Vai, indeed, Na, not, Sevata, would serve, Mukunda Vikramam, the glorious activities of Mukunda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, by associating with persons for whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, is the all in all, one can hear of his powerful activities and soon come to understand them. The activities of Mukunda are so potent that simply by hearing of them, one immediately associates with the Lord. For a person who constantly and very eagerly hears narrations of the Lord's powerful activities, the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, in the form of sound vibrations, enters within his heart and cleanses it of all contamination. On the other hand, although bathing in the Ganges diminishes bodily contaminations and infections, this process and the process of visiting holy places can cleanse the heart only after a long time. Therefore, who is that same man who will not associate with devotees to quickly perfect his life? Purport. Bathing in the Ganges can certainly cure one of many infectious diseases, but it cannot cleanse one's materially attached mind, which creates all kinds of contaminations in material existence. However, one who directly associates with the Supreme Lord by hearing of his activities cleanses the dirt from his mind and very soon comes to Krishna consciousness. So the Goswami confirms this in Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shavanam Kirtana Vedanta Sto Hyavabhajani Vidunoti Surhitsatam. The Supreme Lord within everyone's heart becomes very pleased when a person hears narrations of his activities, and he personally cleanses the dirt from the mind of the listener. Vedanta Sto Hyavabhajani Vidunoti. He washes off all dirt from the mind. Material existence is caused by dirty things within the mind. If one can cleanse his mind, he immediately comes to his original position of Krishna consciousness, and thus his life becomes successful. Therefore, all the great saints in the devotional line very strongly recommend the process of hearing. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced the congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra to give everyone a chance to hear Krishna's holy name. For simply by hearing Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, one becomes purified, Chaito Darpana Marjanam. Therefore, our Krishna conscious movement is chiefly engaged in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra all over the world. After one's mind becomes cleansed by chanting Hare Krishna, one gradually comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness and then reads books like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the Nectar of Devotion. In this way, one becomes more and more purified than material contamination, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nashtaprayesh Shrabadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavatu Tamashloke Bhaktir Bhaviti Naishtiki. Quote, by regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering service unto the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is practically destroyed, and loving service unto the glorious Lord, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. That's the end of the quote. In this way, simply by hearing of the powerful activities of the Lord, the devotee's heart becomes almost completely cleansed of material contamination, and thus his original position as an eternal servant, who is part and parcel of the Lord, becomes manifest. While the devotee engages in devotional service, the passion and ignorant modes of material nature are gradually vanquished, and then he acts only in the mode of goodness. At that time, he becomes happy and gradually advances in Krishna consciousness. All the great acharyas strongly recommend that people be given a chance to hear about the Supreme Lord. Then success is assured. The more we cleanse the dirt of material attachment from our hearts, the more we will be attracted by Krishna's name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and activities. This is the sum and substance of the Krishna consciousness movement. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Before I start, what is that verse? Yatirtha buddhi salile nakari chit. You know this verse? Janeshu abhigeshu saiva gopkara. How does it start, you know? Yeah, yes, yatma buddhi. Yeah, that's on the routine. Okay, so the cause of material existence is a contaminated mind. So in order to become freed from material existence, one has to get the mind to cooperate. To advance in any process of yoga, the mind is the essential element that needs to be come under one's control. Krishna describes two broad stages of Krishna consciousness or spiritual life in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Arurukshu stage and the advanced stage, which is called the Aruda stage. Arurukshu means beginning and Aruda means the advanced stage. And Krishna describes to go from the beginning stage to the advanced stage, you need the help of one's mind. And then he says that the mind can be the friend of the conditioned soul or his greatest enemy. And for one who has controlled this mind, then the mind is the greatest friend. For one who has failed to do so, the mind is the greatest enemy. And who is that inimical mind? It is the mind that is attached to material existence, the various objects in the material world and material existence. And the friendly mind is the mind that's detached from material existence. And so when one is able to detach his mind from matter, then he can move forward in Krishna consciousness or spiritual life. And to the degree he's unable to do so, progress is very slow. So in the sixth chapter, of course, Krishna gives a whole process of yoga by which one can do that. And Arjuna rejects it as being too complicated. Perhaps foreseeing the Kali Yuga situation, there was no way that anyone could even dream of doing. If Arjuna couldn't do it, he's much more qualified man than any of us. So he protests that this process seems impossible. It would be easier to control the wind than it is to control my mind. And in fact, he could control the wind. Because they, as Kshatriya warriors, they knew all these mantras for invoking wind weapons and fire weapons and water weapons. You know, if someone attacked you with a fire weapon, you would just counteract with a water weapon. So they actually could control the wind. And other various elements through mantras and so on. Such were their prowess. So he said, I think it would be easier to control the wind than it is to control my mind. To which Krishna responds, yes, I agree with you. It is very difficult to control the mind. But it is certainly possible by a great practice and detachment. Abhyasana, what is that? Yogena? Vairagena? Chagriyate? Something like that. By great practice and detachment, one can certainly do it. So then when Prabhupada comments on this verse, he says, well, what is that practice in the age of Kali, particularly? That practice is, of course, the practice of Krishna consciousness, which begins with hearing about Krishna. So hearing is deemed as the best process. Prabhupada's language in that purport, I believe, is the best process of purging the mind of all sorts of material contaminations. The material contaminations exist in the mind as impressions. So we may not be, not that we may not be, generally we're not fully aware of the type of contaminations going on in our mind when we're doing our activities throughout the day, because it's not always at the surface, but they exist in the mind as impressions. And all it takes is coming in contact with something to bring the impression out. So just like, for example, we've done, many of us may have done various interesting activities before during the Krishna consciousness movement. And after practicing Krishna consciousness for some time, we're not directly so much conscious of those activities. But then all of a sudden, you see like a sign or a billboard or something. And it kind of, it reminds you of something. And that remembrance brings to the surface that particular samskara. And all of a sudden, your mind is like, God, I'm contaminated, you know. And you can't control it. That's how contamination works. It's not always in the forefront of the consciousness, but they exist as samskaras. And all it takes up is a stirring up of a particular situation, and then those samskaras come to the surface. If you had a bad type of, let's say, relationship or situation in the material world, it has certain patterns that you recognize. And when you come to the association of devotees, you may not be so much aware of those things anymore. But then as you see devotees acting in certain ways, you say, oh, I recognize this, oh, I recognize that. And all those impressions from those bad experiences come to the surface. And that way our mind remains contaminated. So that, in other words, the contamination is extremely subtle. So then how to counteract it? So the best process is said to be hearing. Because hearing process creates another type of samskara. Hearing process is also a samskara, or at least it can be. And it creates another type of impression within the mind. So the more you hear, the more those types of impressions, Krishna conscious impressions, begin to exist within the mind. And that way there isn't much room for the bad contaminations. The more you fill the mind up with these types of samskaras that are drawn from hearing, samskaras that are related to Krishna, then the more the material contaminations are kicked out. And that way it's easier to make progress on the path of Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada said, that many times he stated that the Krishna consciousness movement is to give people the opportunity to hear. That is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement, to simply give people the opportunity to hear. Nitya siddha Krishna prema sadhu kabunoi shavananda shuddha chitte karaya udoi. It says that Krishna consciousness, Krishna prema, is nitya siddha. It is an eternally perfect, let's say, energy. and it is not to be gained or found anywhere in this material world. It is an energy that is invested into the heart of the living entities by the association of the spiritual master. And then Shravana Adi, as he takes that investment, as I was describing the other day, he takes that investment and capitalizes on it. I don't know how investments work in the material world, but someone makes an investment into your business and then you have to grow the investment, isn't it? Or at least that's the ideal, right? You want to expand or grow the investment. So as the spiritual master invests Krishna consciousness into us, primarily through the process of speaking, kirtan, then we try to grow that investment by the process of hearing. Shuddha chitta karaya udoy. Shuddha chitta means the heart becomes purified by our attempt to expand the investment through the processes of hearing, chanting, etc. And then karaya udoy, our Krishna consciousness becomes manifest progressively. Another verse that's very nice in this regard, Pravishta Karna Randrena Swanam Bhavasoro Ruham Dunoti Shamalam Krishna Salidasa Yatasharat. This verse comes in the second canto, chapter 8, in the very beginning. Parikshit Maharaj is speaking and glorifying Shukadeva Goswami. And he says, Pravishta Karna Randrena means the sound incarnation of Krishna. The sound incarnation of Krishna enters into the ear of the one who is giving oral reception, eagerly hearing. And it's Swanam Bhavasuro Ruham, it sits on a lotus heart of the devotee. So an interesting commentary I saw on this that was nice is that Paramatma is already in the heart. And God is already in the heart as Paramatma. So what is the significance of saying Krishna enters into the heart through the ear? Because Paramatma is already in the heart. So what is the significance of saying that Krishna enters into the heart by the sound incarnation? Anyway, I'll tell you the answer. So you know. The answer that is mentioned that was very sweet is that Paramatma is neutral. That is his characteristic as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. Udasinavat, he is neutral. So if one acts properly according to the laws of nature, okay, you get rewarded. If someone is acting improperly, you get punished. And he is not at all attached to any of the activities of the conditioned soul. So he's described as neutral. Just like a judge in a courtroom. The judge in a courtroom just like looks at you, and did you follow the law or did you break the law? He's not so much interested in you personally as such. But not to say that Paramatma is not interested, but his characteristic is described as neutral. He's very detached. But Krishna is not neutral when he's interacting with any living entity. He's actually trying to draw the living entities toward him. Super Soul doesn't exactly actively do that. If he sees that some interest is there in the conditioned soul, he will help give the inspiration what to do, help give the inspiration how to move forward. If the inspiration is there, but he's not trying to draw inspiration per se, because he's neutral. You want to enjoy the material world, go for it. But Krishna is very active. So when it says the sound incarnation of Krishna enters into the ear and sits on the lotus of the heart, this was expressed by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that sound incarnation of Krishna actually draws the living entity's attention towards him. He that sound vibration tries to make the living entity attached to himself, Krishna. So Krishna, in other words, is trying to make one attached to him. Whereas Paramatma is quite neutral, Krishna is trying to make the living entity attached to him. So the sound incarnation in the form of a particular loving relationship with him. And in a sense, when it says, ye yata mam prapadyante tam tutaya bhajamiyaham, the idea is that Krishna enters into the heart and is extending himself to the living entity in a peculiar sort of way that only the living entity can himself know within his heart. And that extension of Krishna to the living entity draws out a particular loving sentiment towards Krishna. Just like when someone extends themselves, this is somewhat of a mundane example, but it might illustrate the point nicely. Suppose you're drowning in the ocean, and depending on who rescues you, it might draw out a certain sentiment. You know, you could think of a mundane movie. So someone's drowning, and when a male lifeguard rescues them, he thinks, oh, he is my friend. And if a female lifeguard rescues him, he might fall in love with her. You know, depending on who's extending himself the reaction comes in a different way. So similarly, depending on how Krishna's extending himself to the living entity, it draws out a particular loving sentiment of the soul towards Krishna. And then, so then that sentiment is sitting there in the core of that soul's heart. That's what is meant by bhava. Swanam bhava sarodham. The bhava of that devotee, of that living entity, is drawn out towards Krishna. And dunoti shamalam Krishna. Then by purification of the heart, Krishna kicks out all the contamination that is there in the heart, so that that particular bhava becomes more and more manifested in relationship to himself. And the example is given, salilasa yatasharat. It is just like a autumnal rains on pools of muddy water. Apparently, when during the rainy season in India, all the dirt comes to the surface. But during the autumn rains are apparently like a light drizzle. I've not been there during that time, but we just take it from the hearing process. It's like a light drizzle, and then all the dirt goes to the surf, goes to the bottom of the ocean and so on. So the example is given that by hearing about Krishna, that hearing acts like autumn rains on the heart, not only causing the contaminations to go to the bottom, which is not useful for us, but actually destroying them completely. Such is the process of hearing about Krishna. So it's being mentioned here, this power of hearing, and the hearing process it comes in an order, as often heard. The first one comes with hearing the holy name of Krishna. So Prabhupada mentions this point. First, hearing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And the idea of hearing the holy name of Krishna is that it gives qualification for hearing the pastimes of Krishna. First, one has to hear the holy name of Krishna to purify his heart and to prepare the heart for hearing. That's the idea of doing kirtan. Very practical. This actually is very practical. When we start the Sunday feast program, and when there's a very ecstatic kirtan, then that prepares people's hearts for hearing something about Krishna. If you were to start the program off with a hearing, people already have so many doubts, this, that, and other. It'd be hard to get through that. But when you start the program with a very ecstatic kirtan, especially if everyone's dancing, especially if you can somehow pull the newcomers in to the process of dancing and chanting with the devotees, it is often seen that even when devotees offer obeisances, they offer obeisances. I sometimes even wonder if they know what they're doing, you know. They become so overwhelmed by the happiness or the experience that they're getting, that whatever the devotees are doing, they're also doing. So devotees offer obeisances, they also offer obeisances, you know. And then devotees come to enthusiastically hear, then they feel like, let me also enthusiastically hear. So the idea of hearing the holy name first is that it prepares the heart for hearing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's very challenging. The hearing process is actually a very difficult process because it generally requires a lot of factors in order for it to be successful. One very important factor is the speaker has to be qualified or realized. Another important factor is the hearer has to be qualified. So this is a great challenge, and the qualification of the speaker is one way of expressing it, Shotriyam Brahmanishtam. He has heard from his guru, he is fixed in the absolute truth. Another is Shabdapurecha Nishnatam. He is learned in the Shastras. He has expansive awareness of the Shabda. Shabda Praman means the revelation of the scriptures. So he has expansive knowledge of the Shastras and is able to navigate, is able to give elucidation and answers according to what the Shastra says. And Pare means Krishna, so he's also fixed in the absolute truth, detached from matter. This is a qualification of the speaker. And of the hearer, he should be surrendered. So that already makes it a very challenging process. Shravanam. In order for it to be very effective, Pranipata is the first thing that Krishna mentions. He should be surrendered. The second is that he should be incredibly inquisitive about the absolute truth, Jignasu Shreya Uttamam. And he should be prepared to render service to the hearer, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when bringing in all these factors, the hearing process is actually very challenging. And to whom will we feel inspired to surrender? Especially when the heart is filled with contamination, no one's going to want to surrender. So therefore, the first thing is to hear the holy name of Krishna. Because by hearing the holy name of Krishna more and more and more, then more and more one becomes inclined towards the other factors of Krishna consciousness, like receiving the association of a guru, surrendering to him, hearing from him, developing Krishna consciousness more. This all happens from hearing the holy name of Krishna. So one begins there with hearing the holy name, and then from there, the form, the qualities, the pastimes of Krishna. So that is being described here. The most important factor for making hearing a very successful process is really the faith of the individual. Krishna mentions this in Bhagavad Gita, I think in chapter 4, verse 40, I think, where he mentions three types of persons: those who are ignorant, those who are faithless, and those who are doubters. Those who are ignorant are just like beasts of burden. They just want to enjoy sense gratification. So hearing is a very great painful experience for them, hearing anything about Krishna. But they just want to party and enjoy life, as it were. And this is called agya, means ignorant. Then the second class of persons is ashraddha. Ashraddha means lacking shraddha, not having any faith. So these types of persons, they know the scriptures, theoretically speaking, but they lack faith in them. So someone like a scholar would be there, or even a disappointed devotee might be there, who's had some really sour experiences in Krishna consciousness. So he's aware of the scriptures, but he lacks faith in them because perhaps he didn't see proper examples or this and that. There was some fall downs or this, that he becomes confused, bewildered, and he becomes faithless. And so although he knows the shastras, he lacks faith in them. So then that makes it very tough to hear. And the other category of person, which is actually considered the worst category, are the doubters. The doubters are persons who have faith in the scriptures, but they lack faith in their prospect and what the scriptures are saying. As the scriptures speak about a lot of lofty things, like Krishna prema. It's a very lofty idea, this pure love of God. You know, when you speak about love in the material world, everyone thinks they've got it. You know, they've understood what is love. You know, love means making out or something like that. The two are practically considered synonymous. But then when you come to Krishna consciousness, it's like this whole other category of what they mean by love. Hairs should be standing on end. You know, you should be dropping in the ground, you know, shivering, ecstasy. Love takes on a whole other type of proportion that we never, you know, knew about. You know, love just meant like, kind of like a feeling. But in Krishna consciousness, love meant all these ecstatic symptoms were manifesting. When you hear about Lord Chaitanya's love, you become a little frightened, in fact. You know, especially in the Anchalila, his Anchalila, when he's performing pastimes, he's concluding his pastimes in Jagannath Puri. Some of those pastimes are quite, you know, what, for the conditioned mind, outrageous. You know, he's perspiring blood due to ecstatic symptoms of Mahabhav. He jumps into the air and his arms become so, the joints all separate from from each other, being held together only by the skin. So when people see Lord Chaitanya's body, it's like elongated like anything, you know, because all the joints are separated. Now this is love. This is the influence of the highest type of love, Mahabhav, you know. That's very lofty. Of course, I should just put a footnote here, that the sadhaka body can't withstand such ecstatic symptoms for obvious reasons. You would die. One needs actually a spiritual body to exhibit such ecstatic symptoms. And if you sound freaked out, it makes sense because it does look a little weird. And therefore, when Narada Muni begins to describe about what is love to Gopal Kumar, he says, I'm a little reluctant to tell you because you're about to hear some far out things here. You know, it looks like suffering even for the conditioned mind. Anyway, the point is that love is very lofty, and it's really our prospect in Krishna consciousness. But then one doubts his prospect in Krishna consciousness, you know. Therefore, a reluctance to give attention to how that can be captured for himself. Because it's so lofty. Something like a Anarthanivritti is very practical because we know of our anarthas. We know that they're there. And therefore, we do hear a lot about
the importance of anartha nirvritti, or getting rid of the anarthas. But sometimes we may lack enough hearing about the actual goal of life, Krishna prema, and even when we do get chances to hear about that from certain Vaishnavas, we may not like to hear those things, deeming them impractical, because we doubt our prospect, at least in the very near future, like this life. We doubt our prospect in such lofty affairs. So in this way, it makes it challenging for conditioned souls to hear. There are many challenges are there. Their desire for sense enjoyment, the struggles that we have with our faith, and then our tendency to doubt our prospects in Krishna consciousness makes it very challenging to hear. And therefore, the process of kirtan has been given to help us, along with the association of devotees. The main idea of associating with devotees is not only we can hear about Krishna consciousness from them, but they will help us to increase our faith and our prospects in Krishna consciousness. Because Lord Chaitanya's idea is to give something very high to people who are very low. That's Lord Chaitanya's idea. And so when you're feeling very low, because that's actually our situation, we're very low, it is very hard to remain always encouraged in Krishna consciousness. So one thing that is important to derive from the association of devotees, aside from hearing about the activities of Krishna, which requires a lot of qualification, is to receive from them the encouragement about our prospects in Krishna consciousness, that actually the loftier things are achievable. Whether or not we get it in this life is really unimportant, but that they can be achieved is the most important thing. And getting that encouragement from devotees increases our enthusiasm to hear. Otherwise, if you doubt your prospect in Krishna consciousness, how can you hear? It'd just be like a Niyamagraha program. Okay, we got to show up, we got to sit down and hear something about Krishna, but we doubt our prospect in actually achieving any of the things that we hear about. But once you feel encouraged that you can get it, even if we're not there yet, then immediately the hearing process reveals so much more. Because that's the way faith works. Faith reveals realities that are not perceivable to the external eye. Just like the qualification of a guru. What reveals the qualification of a guru? What reveals his exalted position? What is really the faith of the individual? Prabhupada, sometimes people take it for granted. Well, it's obvious that Prabhupada is an exalted personality. And they go down the long list of all of Prabhupada's accomplishments that make it obvious that he's an exalted personality. But it's not that everyone saw like that. Many scholars didn't see Prabhupada in that way. Many of Prabhupada's own god brothers didn't see him in that way. And so on. And they were also far more qualified than the disciples of Prabhupada in terms of their understanding of Shastra, in terms of their chanting of Hare Krishna and so on. They were far more, objectively speaking, far more qualified than any of Prabhupada's disciples. And yet they didn't have the same vision of Srila Prabhupada as the disciples had. Why is that? What is it that revealed the exalted position of Prabhupada for the disciples that all these qualified persons of Prabhupada's godbrothers could not see in him? Service? Yes, sir, you can say service. Yeah, that's true. Their affection, their faith in Srila Prabhupada revealed it. It is not that it is actually directly perceivable with just the mundane eye. It is the effect of Shraddha that the revelation of the exalted nature of a person is revealed for that individual. And so those who lack that faith, they lack that revelation, or at least that appreciation. If, for example, the scholars didn't have that faith in Prabhupada, so they did not appreciate his work in Krishna consciousness. Whereas the disciples do have it, and therefore they gain the revelation of Prabhupada's exalted nature and his contribution and so on to the world. So faith is very important. This is what devotees can give us. And that increases our ability to hear in Krishna consciousness. So these are some ideas. Prahlad Maharaj is expressing the importance of hearing, processing Krishna consciousness. Who is that person who would not want to hear? Well, those who are ignorant, faithless, and doubters. So then, giving that up by the association of devotees, one hears better and increases his prospects in Krishna consciousness. So that's it for me. Are there any comments, questions, concerns?
Okay. Krishna. Thank you for your class. I have a few questions, but I guess probably the most important question is something that you were talking about later on in your class about how those that we hear from, they're meant to introduce us to the higher, our higher prospects in Krishna consciousness. And so my question is, how do you keep your eyes on the moon and your feet on the ground?
By hearing. Yeah, one requires the association of the voice to keep us grounded if we're getting off track. Therefore, living in the society of devotees. Because one thing is to be grounded or become, how do you say, what's the opposite of grounded? Floating, lightheaded, and the other thing is just leaving. You don't float high into the lofty realms of Krishna consciousness, you just walk out the door. So for both reasons, Sangha of devotees is most important. Our prospects in Krishna consciousness come by association with devotees. So how do you keep your eyes on the prize and stay grounded in the same way? The association of devotees, when they see you're getting off the ground, they can keep us grounded and progressive.
Thank you for that answer to that first one. And when Narada Muni is speaking to Srila Vyasadeva in the fifth chapter of the first canto, he tells him that the more you, after Krishna has given him a vision of himself and he disappears, then he says that the more you hanker after me, the more your material desires will diminish. And you were making a similar point in the beginning of your class about how through the hearing process the heart gets purified. And so my question is, because in the purport, Prabhupada equalizes like service to Krishna and being with Krishna is basically the same thing. So if one is fully absorbed in his service, then that's not different than like meditating on Krishna. But my personal experience is I've spent a lot of time mentally contemplating like ways to do my services. And maybe it's cleansing my heart in a way that I can't perceive, but I still find that... I don't know. I don't know if so much purification comes by thinking about. Maybe it's because I'm thinking about. I'm not sure. Maybe you could help out. What is like, you know? Why does Prabhupada say that, and what's the proper way to apply that?
Why does Prabhupada say just by hearing you're associating with Krishna directly?
No, Prabhupada says that by that one who's engaged in service to Krishna, then that's not different than thinking about Krishna or associating with Krishna directly.
Okay.
And the verse says that the more you hanker after me, the more your material desires will dissipate. My question is, you know, I find my mind will a lot of times be engaged in thinking about my various services for Krishna, but I don't find that then I feel purified afterwards. In fact, sometimes I get a little agitated, you know, and then I have to like do something else to try and, you know, try to, like read Bhagavatam or Charan Krishna, something like that. But I find that just meditating on my services isn't, at least for me, it's not sufficient. Maybe I'm doing it wrong, you know? So I was confused when I read that in Prabhupada's purport. I can show it to you later also, maybe it's too much for the class.
Well, the meditation... So you're saying you find that the meditation, your services of Krishna is not as effective to you, for you, as directly rendering services... Yeah. I mean, yeah, a lot of times when we hear these statements in Prabhupada's books about how chanting the holy name of Krishna is non-different from associating, hearing is non-different, remembering is non-different, he's really speaking about like a perfectional stage. It's not like, it's not like the type of hearing and chanting that we're doing in the beginning of our Krishna consciousness. In the beginning of our Krishna consciousness, our hearing and chanting is just to help us become, you know, purified and spiritually progressive. It's not the same experience as those who are perfected in hearing and chanting. Hearing and chanting, again, as I've been mentioning, is the eternal characteristic of entities in the spiritual world. They're always hearing and chanting about God. And the secondary characteristics with functions in the material world is that it delivers one to the lotus feet of Krishna. So when perfected souls hear and chant, they really do associate with Krishna directly. Although they also want to associate with him also personally, even though that it is the case. So when the gopis would be hearing and chanting about Krishna, they would have a spurti of Krishna. A spurti means a vision of Krishna would be manifest before them. And sometimes it was the case that when Krishna would actually come before them, they didn't know, they couldn't tell the difference between just hearing and chanting about him and Krishna manifesting as a spurti or them actually meeting Krishna. So when Krishna would actually come, they would just think it was a vision in their heart, you know? And so then they would just ignore him because they couldn't tell. Such was the power of their hearing and chanting. And our hearing and chanting in the material world is to give us prospects to and such experiences. So therefore, because we're in the beginning stages, we don't have such profound experiences. Therefore, we're taking a combination of activities in order to help to keep us focused. So, you know, this activity is working out for some time and then it's not. So then I gotta switch gears and, you know, now I just need to just hear only, or now I need to go do some practical service. We're taking a combination of activities in order to keep our focus on the goal. But our experiences won't be so profound in the beginning. We're beginners, so it's not going to be so profound. So when we hear this, just serving Krishna is not different from back home, back to Godhead. That's, of course, a true statement, but that's beyond the scope of our realization and experience right now. Only persons on a perfectional stage really experience that relationship with Krishna a lot. We're only on the strength of our faith, understanding that this is the case, but it's beyond the scope of our actual subjective achievement. So we have to just carry on like that. And then we have a combination of activities that help us do that, because if I had to just hear and chant, I'm not going to make it. So here's some other activities to help keep us. As Prabhupada says, devotional service gives us many facilities for progress. Hearing, chanting, all these are different types of facilities. Some pada sevanam refers to all the practical services we do. We have many facilities to keep our prospects strong.
Thank you for class. When you were talking about doubting, I guess, I don't know if this is doubting, but where I find myself is skeptical, personally, like, these promises are wonderful, and but I don't have any confidence in myself in terms of, like prema bhakti.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. We doubt our own prospects in these loftier realms of Krishna consciousness.
And then I think, on the other hand, I'm thinking, am I being offensive? Am I being offensive not even knowing I'm being offensive? And so, prema bhakti is very real because we see it in great devotees. But when I look at myself, I have no confidence in my ability to see myself with any objectivity.
Good, seeing yourself
with any objectivity.
Yeah, it's not depending on our strength that we're going to achieve anything in Krishna consciousness, so that's okay. That we, actually, the less confidence we have in ourselves, the better. in the sense that confidence that we ourselves will achieve anything in Krishna consciousness, achieve anything on our own strength. The strength is coming from Krishna, through the parampara, as I mentioned in other class, and it's being invested into us, and we're trying to expand that investment by our feeble endeavors, no less. So a lot of our advancement is coming by that investment, and it's not that the investment stops, it continues. Our Diksha Guru gives an investment at the time of initiation, a very profound investment, and then throughout our life, other gurus manifest to help invest further. So they're called the Shiksha Gurus, which may be served by the Diksha Guru or may not be. And these Shiksha Gurus, they're also giving investments all throughout your life. You shall be meeting such personalities per your desire to have that association. And they're also giving investments. And that way we're moving all the way along, not really on our own strength or our own capital, but by the investments of all these personalities Krishna arranges for us. And that way our prospect in Krishna consciousness is achievable. One who thinks he can do it on his own obviously doesn't have a lot to be confident about because our facility is very meager. Our brain is very useless and so on. So it's not to not have confidence in our ability to achieve anything is not a disqualification. But if we have doubts that the investments will be any good, then then that is more problematic. And that's actually where the problem usually comes up for many of us. We doubt the personalities who are making investments into us. And that way, all we have is our own strength, which is practically null and void, really, for movement in Krishna consciousness. So once we gain strong enough faith in personalities who are making investments in our Krishna consciousness, then things seem to go a little bit better for the individual. But to the degree we're struggling in that area, that this investment that they're giving is worth anything, either because I'm so worthless, this is another type of, you know, egoistic idea, I'm so worthless, I'm so useless, I'm beyond the ability to be helped. That's one form of it. And the other form is, I don't need any help. That one is prominent also. These are the two features of how the false ego will work. And therefore, doubting the investments made by our well-wishers, who are our gurus in Krishna consciousness, then that makes it tough. And that's where most of our devotees actually struggle with. We have no faith in the investors. And what they can do for us, or if they have anything, if their investment is anything worth anything for our actual achievement. So then we're just depending on our own little strength. And unfortunately, because we have very little strength, we don't move very far, or we move very slowly. So I don't know if they call this the negative approach towards the absolute. You know, emptying oneself out of the idea that I have anything that's worth anything for movement in the absolute. I think Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says this in an article called The Associates of Sri Chaitanya. He said, one can only have movement on the plane of the absolute if Krishna agrees to become the ground and the legs that you move with. So this is interesting, and this is how he's describing Guru Tattva. It's very interesting. He said, unless the absolute agrees to become the ground and the legs by which you move on the plane in the absolute, then there is no question of movement on the absolute. So he says this function Krishna performs through the manifestation of the guru, where he's actually performing the function of becoming the legs that are allowing movement on the plane of the absolute. So that means our prospects really is in faith in that manifestation of Krishna. It's faith in Krishna. And that manifestation of Krishna is called as guru. That gives us hope. It gives us the silver lining. What is that saying? Silver lining in the cloud. Silver lining in the cloud, like that. The light at the end of the tunnel. Otherwise, it's just tunnel and then tunnel and tunnel, you know. when we look at our own situation, all we can see is tunnel. You know, turn left, tunnel, turn right, more tunnel, go up, more tunnel. Everywhere is tunnel. But when there's faith in the Krishna and his manifestation as guru, then all of a sudden there's a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, at least I can see it. It's pretty far, but the light is there. I am to move in that direction. I'm like that. So it is undoubtedly hard work, because getting faith is tough enough, and then keeping it, especially in the age of Kali, especially in the age of the internet, where you can go on the internet and find so many blasphemous statements about your guru and so on easily, or is very hard to maintain strong faith. Sometimes it may even be recommended in the outset just kind of live in a bubble, you know, you and your guru and people who are also like him. And otherwise, it's a big challenge, and especially in America, it's even, I think, all the more challenging. Because the internet is so easy. You know, looking up anything about your guru online is not recommended. Simply, if you know some site of his, where his lectures are at and so on, one should go there. But don't like Google, you know, the name of your guru or anything like that. And this way, to keep up the balance of strong faith becomes almost nearly impossible. You know, like this. But if you have that faith, then movement is easy. Easier. All right, okay, anything else? Oh, okay.
You were mentioning keeping your eye on the prize.
Yeah.
And this is a very hard concept to really understand, because we were talking about Anchalila, for example.
Mm-hmm.
This is impossible to comprehend. So what does this actually mean, to keep your eye on the prize? Is there different visions based on your stage of advancement?
Yeah, what does it mean to keep our eye on the prize? Well, based on the way you phrase the question, I can see, and I don't know if I want to keep my eye on this prize, or that prize is inconceivable, you know, limbs flying all over the place, and so I don't know. So then from the context of your question, you could say keep the eye on the prize means to become more edified in the philosophy, in the understanding of Krishna consciousness. Because otherwise, without, just as Krishna says, jamra karma chame divyam evam yo viti tattvata, anyone who understands the nature of my janma and my karma, my birth and activities in truth, then he will be delivered from matter. So from the context of your question, keep the eye on the prize means to become more edified. Evam yo veti tatvata, veti tatvata, become veti tatvata, the understanding truth. What is Krishna kind? Otherwise, Krishna prema, Krishna prema means love of God. But then we don't have any understanding of what that means. We can't even conceptualize it as such. So then our own mundane ideas of love start to enter in and create a bewildering situation. But as we become more edified through our study, through our hearing, and through our chanting, then we gain a clear understanding of what the loftier ideas are, and then it's easy to focus upon them. In other words, there can be no focus without a clear understanding of what it is I'm focusing on. You know, it's like looking in a, I guess like a microscope, and you have to make the adjustments so that you can see clearly, isn't it? A microscope like that. So also, we're looking through at the goal, but it's very blurry. So the adjustment of the vision is our progressive understanding of Krishna consciousness. You know, the understanding of the tattva, the spiritual truths of Krishna consciousness. That's the adjustment factor. And then as we become further edified in understanding what those are, then you can see the prize very clearly, and then your movement becomes clear. So from the context of your question, it just means that we have to become more, you know, edified in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Not only through study, but through hearing, through chanting, through service. That's how we become edified. The process of devotional service is a process of spiritual understanding. And that clears up the vision of what the actual goal is, and we move toward it. Okay, so I'll stop there. Om Tat Sat, Srila Prabhupada.